Welcome to the Floor Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 15th of July, recording at 9:30 p.m., and that's British Summer Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term audio, but let's first have a quick review of the week. The big story of several in quite a volatile week, but the biggest story of all was the blowout to the upside by long-dated government bond yields, 10-year bond yields for the so-called European periphery or southern European countries and Ireland. And they surged on Monday and Tuesday, then started to come back on Tuesday, fell again on Wednesday, steadied Thursday, and are firmer in here today with Irish yields pushing up over 14% and to a new high. Now, that roiled markets elsewhere, at least in terms of Asian stock markets. And the China sector, after an early sell-off, has been quite steady, particularly the A shares and B shares, Shanghai, that is, and Shanghai Exchange. And the European stock markets, again, plunged on Monday and Tuesday, then a modest bounce thereafter. Most of them still above the June lows, although we had a few dip through those levels very on an intraday basis. And Wall Street, again, plunged on Monday and Tuesday, then firmed up. And it closed out the week here with the S&P at 113.16. That's up just over 0.5% today. NASDAQ a little firmer. In other, having mentioned the periphery countries in Euroland, other long-dated government bonds, prices in the U.S. Treasuries had soared on Monday and Tuesday, then fell back, steadied up a little bit later in the week, and prices were reasonably firm for the gilts and bunds as well. The U.S. dollar, I mean, currencies probably had less volatility, although the yen did strengthen quite a bit early in the week before giving up a little bit of that move. And the euro weakened early in the week, but then's picked up a little bit. And the dollar, you have to say, or I will have to say, is just a bit soft here. We've got the euro closing out the week at 141.57 against the greenback. Sterling back up to 160.132, having dipped under 160 earlier in the week. Now, more drama in precious metals, and it's been a great week for gold and silver. Silver up 10 days, gold rather, up 10 days in a row. Silver very firm, closing out the week at 39.26. I didn't mention gold's price, 1593.75, so new all-time highs in dollars, euros, and sterling, and perhaps a few others. Platinum and palladium, mostly platinum, lagging a little bit. Had a good day yesterday, but gave some of that up today. But a steady sector generally. Industrial metals mixed, but more in the steady category. Copper pushing back up to 441.80. And crude oil, firmer overall. Now, it had most of its rally last week, but as I look, WTI crude right now, 97.42, 117.60. on the Brent. Natural gas, that had dipped in the beginning of the week and then has come roaring back, up 18 cents today to 455.8. Looks quite dynamic on the chart, that move. Grains and beans surge here. I mean, a mega breakout for rough rice through at least over a year's sideways trading. Soybeans pushing towards the higher side of their range, which looks like a mean reversion towards the rising MA. Corn, which plummeted, it was last week, I believe, on the, no, a little bit earlier, the week before, on the USDA's report, which was wildly optimistic, I think, in terms of the crop prospects. But the market's been reflecting more of my view, I think, subsequently, with corn pushing back up into its overhanging trading range. So, lots of action here. What's it all mean? Well, the stock market performance here was a little unnerving that it was so weak in the first 2 days, although we were overbought technically following 3 pretty decent weeks to the upside, particularly for, or not least, for the US stock market indices. So it was a little unnerving to see them fall back so sharply on Monday and Tuesday. And the subsequent action, well, you could almost describe it as a bravura performance here in coming back. I think we've got plenty of reasons for continuing or extending this ranging phase in here, this quite choppy ranging phase, which started off as a mean reversion consolidation towards the rising 200-day moving averages, and on a number of important markets, not least the U.S., those have held, and the action is suggestive of an eventual upward break, but it's a tricky environment. I've been saying that for a number of months, and I think with some considerable justification. Because first, let's look at what's scaring people. Well, these European debt problems are just not going to go away. And they're a bit of a conundrum, because everybody knows that Greece is completely bust, that this should be a major default on the debt. But as Greece is in Euroland, if Greece is allowed to default, and then, of course, you have a very good chance that the other countries in trouble, Ireland, Portugal, at least, quite possibly Spain, maybe Italy, they take a look around and say, well, that was good for Greece, it would be good for us as well. That's an acceptable alternative, and we'd like to do the same thing. And that is the problem, which I described a moment ago as a conundrum. And it's not going to be solved in here quickly. It's going to be fudged and extended and tempting to buy time, but not good. Not good overall. And that will keep a lot of these European stock markets locked in ranges, but where Europe has good, strong multinational companies, just prevents or pr creates rather creates buying opportunities for them. The good multinational companies that are, excuse me, that are leveraged to the global economy, and the global economy is more important to them than what's going on in the periphery European countries that have sovereign debt problems. But for the banks, it's a heavy weight on performance overall, and I wouldn't touch any of those with a metaphorical barge pole. Now, looking around, in addition to that problem, we have the inflationary pressures in Asia, and they've picked up elsewhere a little bit, and this is commodity price inflation. And commodities were long forecast by this service to be first a great opportunity, but then becoming the next big problem, and they did become that next big problem. this year around April time, and there's still a problem. And the respite that we have seen, while welcome, it was in terms of upward prices, it was modest, and crude oil's too high. Natural gas looks like it's going to push up, although there's plenty of production that's taking place in natural gas, but you've got a heat wave in the United States right now, and so that's driving up prices here, at least in the short term, and the overall chart for natural gas looks like a great big base. The upward pressure on commodities is certainly reflected by the grains and beans. Again, the weather is a problem. There were hopes that we would have more benign conditions in the summer months, and it's not really turning out that way. There's a heat wave that's now spreading across the United States, and that's likely to play havoc with the corn and soybean crops. That's, I think, prices have been discounting some of that. So unless we get an abrupt change, which makes the forecasters look silly, we can expect more upward pressure on Monday. But, you know, we do sometimes get abrupt changes. But that's not looking that great. It is if you're long corn and long rough rice and long soybeans. They have been very, very firm indeed. I would be, except I'm maintaining my my own enforced personal trading ban on those. I don't like contributing to food price inflation, but that's purely me, and I don't want to no subscriber should feel guilty in having these positions. Very much a personal choice. I'm not making a moral judgment here. I'm just doing what feels right for me. Now, I digress. It looks to me like those prices are going to go higher. They are among the more interesting commodities right now, and that will add to food price inflation, which caused so many problems earlier in the year, not least with the so-called Arab Spring, some sort of romantic description of it, but Arab uprising. Food prices were always, and shortages were described as a part of the problem in those countries. So that's a worry. And then we've got, good for investors here, we've got a very perky looking gold and silver market, and these patterns can certainly support good gains. We've been looking for good gains from September onwards, and I've often said, and possibly sooner, and the sooner has certainly appeared for gold with a new high, and I think we're pretty much on course or a little bit ahead of course for a strong fourth quarter and carrying on into the new year in precious metals. And there is worldwide interest in these markets. So that's exciting for investors. And the gold shares, which had just been ranging for such a long time, ditto the silver shares, they'd been worse than ranging, are looking very lively in here once again. But I'm starting to accentuate the positives. Have I finished on the negatives? Commodity price inflation is going to remain a problem in the Asian economies, and that will, I think, undoubtedly delay a change in their monetary policy to a more accommodative stance. So there are some hefty headwinds out there. But on the other side of the ledger, we have negative real interest rates. That means below the rates of inflation in just about every country. And save Japan. So that's a good tailwind for equities. Then again, valuations are not bad in a number of these stock markets. And we also have, even in the markets, I mentioned a little bit in Euroland, those multinationals that are leveraged to the Asian-led economy. Well, the United States has more of those than any other country, and they're in terrific shape. They've got great balance sheets, lots of cash. They're lean and mean in terms of having slimmed down in survival mode following the 2008 crash. They're benefiting from this global growth story led again by Asia. And the China story, I mean, people, whether out of fear or envy or ignorance, love to talk this Chinese economy down. And what economy doesn't have problems? But as I've said earlier in the week, they're enviable relative to just about any Western country's problems. And the Western countries that aren't in big problems are better off largely because they export a lot of products to, and mostly commodities to China. I'm thinking of Australia. I'm thinking of New Zealand. I'm thinking of Canada. So, where do we go from here? Well, we're still in this ranging, choppy phase. I had been hoping for a stronger fourth quarter in stock markets. We could still get that, but my doubts have increased because of the strength of commodity markets and that upward push that we've seen in the yields within Euroland. Now, maybe some new deal in Europe is going to wave a wand over those things and they're going to come off, and then that problem subsides and we have can stop worrying about that. Or maybe some other factor is going to cause commodities to gently ease back and take the heat off there. But, you know, it doesn't look that way. It doesn't look that way today. We will see. But as I say, valuations are not at all bad. There are a number of good growth stories. There are a number of good yield stories. We're talking about these all the time. Fuller money themes, I'm very pleased with the way they're holding up here for the most part. And I just think we have an environment where you don't want to pay up for anything. You want to nibble at what you like when we get these temporary downdrafts, such as we saw on Monday and Tuesday, and I think they will remain temporary overall. Well, as this is the Friday audio and it's big picture long-term outlook, where do we go on the really longer term? Well, there's always a bit of creative license in long-term forecasts. It's hard enough to see what's going to happen on the next market day, but we need to think about that at any rate. And the fuller money view is very much that this is a tough decade of tight energy situation, tight commodity situations generally, putting upward pressure. That makes commodities very interesting, but you have to know how to trade them. It's good for the commodity shares more often than not, but high commodity prices, particularly crude oil, create growth slowdowns or even recessions, such as we saw in the 2008 growth slowdown in the growth economies, and much, much worse in the Western economies, as we know. Now, I think this is a story that's going to rumble on. We will be having opportunities in commodities, and then we will see them cut the floor out from underneath some of the stock market stories for a while as growth slows and monetary policy tightens. And markets will pull back, and that will create some new buying opportunities. But I see it sort of a fairly choppy environment here, more often than not. Now, we know what to monitor if the commodity pressure eases and the inflationary pressures abate, then it's going to be fairly bullish overall. But looking further down the road, I think it's not until the shale oil and the shale gas operations are worldwide rather than just mainly in the United States and Canada that it won't be until then, and I've said that it'll take 12 to 15 years, that we will have what Owen and I feel will be abundant energy. Which will be cheaper in real, that's inflation-adjusted terms, than it is today. So that's a nice, almost utopian environment out there compared to what we're experiencing currently. Also, to not be too pessimistic about what's happening in here in this decade, I assume that the Libyan production comes back on stream, but that may take a year, year and a half, a year, year to year or two, and that would alleviate the pressures somewhat. And the shale gas and oil, it's not something, it's not as if a switch is just suddenly flipped out in 12 to 15 years down the road. It's progressive development. So there'll be more shale gas. In other words, I'm saying there'll be more shale gas and oil produced next year than this year, and more the year afterwards, and that'll continue. That progressively more. So that, I think, will really underpin the global GDP growth supercycle that I have talked about and written about. And including the commodity supercycle, and people have sometimes looked at us as if we were lunatics in saying that. And then Standard Chartered came out and they said precisely the same thing. And they actually mentioned the GDP growth supercycle, and in a wonderful report which I posted earlier in the year before we mentioned it. But you can't have a commodity supercycle without having a GDP growth supercycle as well. So have a look at those reports if you're interested in this as a new subscriber, or just want to review it as a veteran subscriber. What about these long-dated government bonds? I am very much in the camp that the bull market is over in terms of falling yields, and I'm not just thinking of periphery European countries. I'm thinking in terms of the US and just about everywhere else. But I've said it'll take time for this bottoming out and base building phase to be completed here, not least because you get QE1 and QE2, and it's just a matter of how long we twiddle our thumbs probably before we get QE3, whether it's called that or some other guise, disguise. When we see this blowout on the periphery yields in Europe, that is a warning of what could happen elsewhere. Now, I don't think it would be anything like that extent in the United States, but it was back in the late 70s and early 80s. So it's not impossible that that could happen again. And I certainly think we will see upward pressure on them. Meanwhile, they're devils to trade here because the yield, such as it is working against one. And they're very choppy in here, and I think that will continue to be the case. There are easier ways to make money, I'm finding, than to short these treasury bonds. But I do feel that on the long-term projections, that all this debt that we're seeing, all the money printing, which, okay, avoids deflation in the major economies, but across the board's deflation that people have feared, 30-style deflation, it certainly avoids, but it creates inflationary pressures and pushes up yields. So I see that coming as well. What about currencies? Well, you've got what one very plain speaking older elder statesman of the financial community has often described to me as the begging bowl currencies, and he's really referring to the US dollar, sterling, and the euro. And there are no grounds for thinking that these currencies are suddenly going to become powerhouses of relative strength beyond short covering bouts and normal market volatility. The strong currencies are the ones that we've talked about all along as candidates for strong currencies. You need a strong economy first. So we go to the Asian-led growth stories. That's a strong currency zone. And then what feeds that Asian-led growth story, and that's commodities. And so the commodity-producing countries, they have strong currencies as well. And more often than not, that will remain the case. I think over the medium to longer term, and we have to protect ourselves against further weakness in the Western currencies. One good way to do that is to, of course, have these equities, whether one's investing overseas in places like China or India, or whether one just has the multinationals that are benefiting, or the resources companies, but that gives us good protection because they're deriving excellent earnings from all over the world. And did I cover precious metals sufficiently? I probably have, maybe too much, but I was asked in an email today, did I think that this was that we were back in July 1979, and beginning the 7-month run that was so explosive in gold to the upside. My answer on that is it could be, but it's probably going to be something a little bit more leisurely. But I think we're heading for a very attractive run here. I don't think gold is overowned, and except maybe by the people who've been gold bugs all along. But in terms of the investment community writ large, I don't think it's overowned. And also, we have huge new interested players. And I'm thinking of that increasingly wealthy corporate population in India and China in particular. And I think their appetite for the precious metals, which has been strong historically, even when they didn't have that much money, well, now they have much more money, especially China, and I think they will their appetite for the precious metals will be ravenous. So that's a good place to be. Not because I say so, but because the charts say so, obviously. And as long as those charts are to the left of those rising moving averages, let's enjoy the bull market. And such an exciting week, too exciting for me. I get to share the burden next week as Owen returns. Listen to the Mark Faber recording that I'm going to be posting this evening. It's interesting. And on that note, have a fantastic weekend. All the best.